Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, if Mike Garafolo's correct and Matt Ioannidis has a torn bicep and could be out for the year, that is a massive blow for this defensive line. I guess luckily they have enough depth that they won't be bad in that area. They'll just no longer be as dominant, but he was a Pro Bowl caliber talent who is their leader among defensive linemen in sacks going back to the beginning of last season. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline to kick off the big one at 1 each. And every day at 1 o'clock, we cover the biggest story in town, try to get you the latest on something you care about. And the big one at 1 is brought to you by your local Honda dealer. It's time to get your local Honda dealer today for end-of-year clearance pricing. See your local Honda dealer today. Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. React to that. Garafolo saying Ioannidis could be done for the year with torn biceps.
You know, it's the one position where they can arguably withstand the loss, because not having Matt Ioannidis out there means that instead you only have Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, and Tim Settle, three NFL starter caliber guys in two positions. You still even have a rotation still. Now, you hate to lose good players, and he is a good player. He's a very good player. But from a performance perspective, I wouldn't expect much drop off here. I think Tim Settle is very good, just hasn't gotten the reps to prove it week in and week out. And I don't have to tell you how good Daron Payne is. He just mauls people every week.
I just feel for the guy. It stinks, and yeah. And he's good, and it's one of those things that you hate. You can afford this one probably because you're right. It's the deepest position group on this roster and one of the deepest position groups in the league, quite frankly. They're good there. You couldn't afford this sad offensive line where Brandon Scherff is out, and we kind of know the rest. It's Tim Settle, obviously, is the guy that's going to fill in. Does that mean more snaps eventually for Ryan Kerrigan, or is it kind of the same?
Probably the same on the outside, although, of course, Kerrigan may see his increase depending on what we hear back on Chase Young. That's another thing we're waiting on. And I would say Young's almost in a different class. So Ioannidis is very good. He starts on at least 28 NFL teams, probably. I think he's that good. I think we can all agree on that. Chase Young's a 32 out of 32. Chase Young is one of the best playmakers at his position. And by the way, he's only been doing this for 2.5 weeks now. And we're not exaggerating when we say that. You can go back and put on the tape. It's insane how good he is. So, there's another position where you say, hey, it's deep. You can use more Ryan Kerrigan. You can use more Montez Sweat. But there's only one Chase Young. He will be missed.
All right, let's go to the offensive side of the ball. I'm not even going to lead you, I guess. Just your thoughts on the Haskins performance. Was it as bad as everybody's making it out to be?
It was that bad. And it was particularly that bad because, while winning and losing, it is not goal number one this season in the sense that they're not going to be a Super Bowl team, this was a winnable football game. And the win and the loss is important for perception, for how things go in the locker room, for how things are perceived. And if you replace him with whatever, a replacement-level performance, to borrow a baseball term, they win that football game. That's just the way it goes. He was below replacement level yesterday. His mistakes directly led to the loss. It was a frustrating showing all around. That does not mean they should pull the plug on him, and Ron Rivera is correct not to do so. But at the same time, you could acknowledge that it was rough out there.
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch with us here on Grant and Danny. What did you make of Ron Rivera's comments now? The tone shifted from what we've heard kind of preseason all season long until this morning, really, to me, where it's, yeah, there is an end to this. We can't just do whatever this is indefinitely, where it sounded like it was a, you know, a stand-by-your-man type situation for a while. Maybe that's not the case anymore. Where is the end, and what did you make of Rivera's comments?
I appreciate that he didn't react that way emotionally after the game, which I think he was certainly within his rights to throw his guy under the bus after the game. You know, his post-game comments were, that's my guy, we'll look at it, you know, I believe in my guy. And then he went back and he looked at it. And then we get today's comments, which I think were more reflective of a guy who looked at it. And, you know, he mentioned he had talked to Scott Turner, talked to Sam Peasy, talked to, you know, the people in the building who work with Haskins day in, day out. So I think he understood just how bad it was. And I think that was reflected in today's comments of, hey, look, you know, you can say he hasn't got a lot of time. He's still developing. But at the same time, there are basic fundamentals we do expect at every position. This is not the minor leagues. This is not college redshirt year. This is professional football. There are certain skills and expectations we have when you walk in the door that are a part of being a professional football player that we're not going to develop on the job. Here's what we will develop. We'll develop you in this offense. We'll develop your touch. We'll develop you being able to make the correct read from three receivers in the patterns we want to run for you. What we will not develop is, you know, having the common sense to know on 3rd and 10 deep in your own territory, you don't try to force something in a close game that ends up being an interception. You are expected to arrive knowing that. And, you know, this is where not playing a lot of college football really comes back to hurt Dwayne Haskins. You know, summer reps are very different from game reps, situational reps. And I'll be very curious where it goes from here. I think certainly there's a short-term commitment to him, I'll say. You know, even with Ron Rivera's comments today, I don't think you pull the plug at any point in the next few weeks. So he will have the opportunity to work his way out of this. It doesn't get any easier from here schedule-wise, but you get those two games against the Giants here in the next month, and I think those will be very telling in terms of seeing, you know, if he can hang around, get this long-term vote of confidence.
Michael, I'm going to ask you what I asked J.P. Finley earlier today, which is, where are the deposits? You know, I am a big believer that young quarterbacks on bad teams, as part of bad offenses, are going to struggle. I expect bad. I'm less bothered by the bad and more bothered by the lack of good. It doesn't take a lot. You just got to watch football every Sunday. You see young quarterbacks, I understand with different supporting casts, but making better throws and more accurate passes and doing things that Haskins has not done. He hasn't completed 60% of his passes in any game this year. Where are my deposits?
Well, I'll rephrase on you because I've seen deposits. I've seen him launch, you know, from the pocket, get it downfield 30 yards into a guy's hands with a pass that has some zip that you see a lot of $30 million quarterbacks in this league, you know, can't do that. He's got a rocket arm and he doesn't even need to set to use it. So I certainly see the raw potential that would lead somebody to say, here is a guy we want to work with and mold him into a quarterback potentially because he has the raw skill sets. I would say what's very frustrating to me is when you miss a check down pass, when you miss a guy who's standing 5 yards from you and you can't put that ball on accurately, that's a red flag where I say that has nothing to do with knowing the system, Grant. That has nothing to do with anything other than that dude's standing 5 yards away from you. Put it on his numbers. Let's gain 3 yards. Keep moving the football here. When you miss that pass, that's where, you know, that's a negative deposit for me. That's a withdrawal where I say, oh, boy, you know, like, hey, if you miss, you know, a downfield pass to McLaurin, which he did on the first drive, you know, he didn't fully set. I think he probably could have led McLaurin a little more, maybe had something on that first drive. Okay, we can work with that. But then you miss Antonio Gibson. He's standing right between you. There's no defenders there. That's scary.
Michael, you mentioned the rocket arm. Where are my deep shots? I don't want him to stand back there and pat the football. This line is terrible and he'll get destroyed. Where are my rollouts? Where am I missed? We got to find a way to get some of the Wolves away from the door here. It's way too easy to know where they're going to line up. It's way too easy to attack this offense. At a certain point, even if you don't hit one, you got to show that you're willing to take a deep shot. It feels like maybe through three games, have they had one, maybe two shots down the field?
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. Also, I'll say yesterday that they did have one to McLaurin on the first drive. It was 25 yards. We can all argue whether that's a deep shot or not. It was deep enough for me. You know, he threw the ball downfield. That's what matters here, and then stretched the field a little bit. I think what happened there was Scott Turner maybe went into a shell a little bit in terms of, I've got to call some completions for this guy to get him comfortable. Then we saw the checkdowns, and they were missing the checkdown. So I think there was a lack of trust there in calling the deep shots that anything was going to come from it. I do think you got to take the gloves off a little bit, you know, in the sense of getting those deposits that Grant talked about, getting those big plays. I think you need to give him those opportunities, because those, if you can get one or two of those a game, that's going to go a long ways towards making everybody feel a little better after you get licked by the Ravens on Sunday.
What'd you think of Isaiah Wright and Antonio Gandy-Golden being more involved?
You know, I love the play they had for Antonio Gandy-Golden. Looked like a Steven Sims-style play there. You know, two young guys, you're waiting to see who breaks out. I always love going big at that position, you know, the same way you had Sims and Harmon last year, because not everybody's going to hit. It's the NFL. You know, a lot of these guys are not going to pan out. You know, it's the same way, you know, you can even extend that to the quarterback position. You know, more lottery tickets you've got, the better. You know, I think of Isaiah Wright and Gandy Golden. I think one of the two is going to pan out, so you consider that a win out of this year's draft class.
Michael, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it, man. Have a great week.
Good times.
Michael Phillips, you, read his work in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. If you want to hop in and talk about the Washington football team falling to 1-2 but still being in first place in the NFC East, you can do that at 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Let's get into the receiving core and those young guys that got used for the first time next.
Yeah, so I think you'd like to think team first, but there are times, you know, I'm an offensive player. There are times where I've been on offense, and I think to myself, you know, middle of the third quarter, middle of the second quarter, whatever it may be, where it's like, man, as an offense, we are letting the defense down. We are letting the team down. And watching the tape yesterday, I kind of felt that. I kind of felt that way. You know, like my old offensive mentality came back. And I said, man, those defensive guys are really, you know, letting them hang out there a little bit more than they need to be, which is always really frustrating. You know, it's a team. It's a team sport, and you want to be there for your guys. And I'm sure those offensive guys wanted to be there for those guys. I'm sure Dwayne Haskins wanted to be there to support those guys, but unfortunately, yesterday he didn't have it, and it really showed through.
Logan Paulson has heard earlier today on Grant and Danny. If you missed that interview, thefandc.com, when we're done, to grab all the podcasts, you can just go to grantanddanny.com/audio, or, of course, rewind to radio.com, which is the way I always listen to the station. Really, really easy to do that. I want to get into something else he said, though, Danny, and that was about the Rivera timeouts, right? Because we haven't talked enough about that today, I don't think.
I know.
Two straight weeks, bro. Two straight weeks, dude. Ron Rivera has just decided, as a guy, I don't know what this means.
I'm all set.
You got to understand, I'm building a culture here. I don't know what that means. I like Ron Rivera. He's a good dude. I want to have dinner with Ron Rivera and talk football with him. I think what he's doing in battling cancer is incredible. He seems like one of the mensches in the National Football League. There's a reason everyone loves him. I categorically disagreed with yesterday's timeout situation. The Arizona game didn't bother me as much, frankly, on a day when there were like 12 terrible injuries in the NFL. And he said, well, look around. There were a lot of injuries. I don't want to keep our guys upright, and we weren't going to win that game anyway. Okay, no problem. Yesterday with Baker Mayfield, who turns the ball over a bunch, and the Browns, who find ways to lose games, and a game that you led in the fourth quarter, it bothered me a little bit more. But here's something I had not thought about. You asked Logan, not about Dwayne Haskins. You asked him about Ron Rivera's not using the three timeouts and if he had seen that before and what he thinks as a guy who played for over a decade in the league recently about that. This is what Logan Paulson said. This was interesting.
I've seen it before, and I remember being a part of a couple games in 2013 where Mike Shanahan elected to do that with Robert Griffin. And one of the things that I've kind of kicked around in my head, and I don't want to stir the pot, I don't want to create a lot of controversy drawing comparison to Robert, is I wonder about Rivera's faith and Haskins' development at this point. Like, are you putting that athlete and that player in a position to be successful, in a position where he can be, where he can excel in a two-minute drill? And, you know, based on how the offensive line was playing, based on his play up to that point, over the last 2 weeks, I would say probably no. And I think a lot of people say, always throw in the towel, but I would say, like, if you're trying to build for the future, if you're trying to cultivate confidence in a young player, maybe that's the best way to do it. Maybe it's to say, I'm not going to put you in a spot where you're going to throw your fourth pick on the day, a spot where you're going to have another force fumble or get hit a whole bunch of times and make a whole bunch of errant throws and kind of put all of your weaknesses on full display. I'm going to give you an opportunity to play within the offense when the time's there, and I'm not going to hang you out to dry in this game where we're going to have a tough time winning based on how we've thrown the football the last 2 weeks.
Hadn't really considered it as – I've certainly thought about it as an indictment of what he thinks about the offense. These guys aren't going to go out and score two touchdowns late. We can't win. But he draws a direct comparison. I covered that team. I remember it. I remember asking the questions of Shanahan, what are you doing here? And he just kind of point blank came out and said, whether he said it directly or not, way more directly than Rivera has, if this is actually what he's doing, I have to keep Griffin healthy. I have to keep him ready to play in 2014. I can't get this guy hurt. And he'd had an injury history. Remember, he ultimately benched him for the last couple games of that year, and they played Cousins. And he said it was so that he could keep Griffin healthy. And everybody took that as a huge shot against the offensive line. He's throwing his line under the bus. He'd already met with his line. The line wasn't the problem. Griffin was the problem. They knew that. Everyone in the locker room kind of knew it. And he went to Kirk Cousins. The line suddenly looked a little bit better. But everyone said, oh, my gosh, Shanahan just threw his offensive line under the bus. But it's interesting to me, Danny, when you compare these two situations, and you heard Logan say he doesn't want to, you know, necessarily start anything major here, but we asked him for his opinion, and his opinion is when he's seen this, it's because the coach doesn't think that much of the quarterback. What do you think of that?
It's what led me to kind of crystallize my working theory in so much as Rivera, doing his assessment, goes, this group is not ready to compete right now for anything meaningful. The defense is good enough for us to be a 5-6 game winner with Charlie check down, and that's that. But that doesn't get us anywhere. That puts us in the same mediocre, 6-10, 7-9 pile of crud that we've been in. This organization, I don't mean we, has been in for 30 years. I don't want to be that. I want to be something special. So we'll take this year to convince the owner to see our way of thinking when it comes to our evaluation of this QB. I don't think Ron Rivera thinks an awful lot of Dwayne Haskins' skill set at this point. Otherwise, you say, I don't care if we're not going to win the game. We're going to fight to the last whistle. Hey, that's a Ron Rivera, Chicago Bears sort of tenacity, toughness approach. And two, this guy clearly needs the reps. Let's say you're not going to win. I don't care. He needs to drop back five times in a hurry-up setting and call a play at the line and flip something to J.D. McKissic out of the backfield or hit Gandy Gold on an end-breaking route. We need that more than we need to win the football game because we need to know, A, can he do that when it's, a little bit lower stakes? But B, if he can't, we need to know that too. And to decide that they can't before you do it and metaphorically punt in the end game situations, I don't get it. The only way to sort of figure out where the puzzle pieces fit is to say, he don't think much of this guy. And that's the only logical thing that fits to me. I welcome another explanation, by the way. If somebody has one, at Funny Danny, at Grant H. Paulson. Godspeed.
The other explanation could be, and I want to hear what people think about this, on the AAA Always On Call listener lines next at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. The other explanation could be it's not about Haskins, it's about the offense itself. It's not that he doesn't think that highly of Haskins, but maybe he doesn't think that highly of his offensive line and how it's playing. He doesn't think that highly of their big play potential. It could be more about the sum of the parts and not just the one player. But I had not given that a lot of thought. And I'm trying to rack my brain to make this make sense because I think the no timeouts thing, if this is now going to be what is done here, it's not going to be a one-off against Arizona on a day when seven guys were lost for the year. They're important players to their team. In the 1 o'clock games while Ron Rivera was getting updates on what was going on and sitting in his office watching football. But this is now just not the exception but the rule. Every single week they're going to take three timeouts with him into the next game, and they're just going to let games end when they're losing. I need to find out in my mind, what is he actually thinking? He's not going to answer. He's not going to tell you why this is, but there's got to be a reason. This is as good a theory as I have heard. I haven't heard a better theory because it makes no sense to me. And I will admit, this is some tinfoil hat stuff. But you got something better? You got a coach who's refusing to call timeouts to keep the game going. Why? I'm looking for answers. You got one?
Because in-game, I can't remember seeing this. I can't. And I don't get – and again, I tweeted this. Again, I'm at Funny Danny, Grant's at Grant H. Paulson. I really like Ron Rivera. That has not changed through 3 weeks. Again, think of what he's gone through already. You want to clean up the trash in this organization? Let's get stuff thrown at you that no human being should have to deal with. I love that guy. I'm a Ron Rivera guy. Part of what I like so much about him is he is not afraid of the press conference. He's not afraid to answer tough questions. He's not afraid to be unconventional. Part and parcel with him being unconventional is he behaves unconventionally. This is unconventional. That doesn't mean that because I don't like this, I'm ready to move on from Ron Rivera, as a couple jackasses who tweeted me at some point today through 3 weeks who decided he's a quitter and he should be fired. That's outrageous. Pipe down, please. I can disagree with this, and I do. But this is part of what I like about him, is that he's not going to just do it because that's what everyone else does. He's got his reasons. I'm just struggling to see them right now, and I'm trying to make puzzle pieces fit. That's all.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. You can call us at 800-636-1067. I want to know what people think about the no timeouts thing, these three timeouts that they've just kept in their pocket and taken with them. And you make a team snap the ball, maybe they fumble. Weird things happen. We've seen the Falcons lose two games where they had a 99% chance to win in the last 2 weeks. We saw the Bills leading the Rams by touchdowns, like 25 points, and then the Rams came back and the Bills were cooked. And then they had a 3rd and 22, and they somehow converted it for 24 yards to Cole Beasley, and then they won a game on a bad call. You flick a ball downfield, maybe you get a weird pass interference call. To not even try is so weird. I want to get your guys' thoughts on this Ron Rivera strategy and why you think he's doing it. And do you give any credence to what Logan's saying? He's telling you that in 2013, Mike Shanahan did something similar, and it was because he didn't trust Robert Griffin. You're listening to The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. For all the talk about how bad the skill group is here in Washington and how much they need in terms of weaponry, and some of that is fair. Terry McLaurin is one of the better receivers in football. He's on pace for 85 catches and 1,434 yards. A year after, as a rookie, as part of a 3-win team, going for 919 yards in just 14 games. If he played in 16 games last year, he probably would have gone for 1,100 yards in his rookie year. He's on pace for 85 and 1,400 this year. And I just looked this up, Danny. McLaurin is averaging 11.2 yards after the catch per reception. Best in the NFL among wide receivers who have at least 15 catches, and I'm just using that as a metric to say, if you caught three balls and one of them, you know, Chase Claypool was an 80-yard run, obviously you would be leading because it's early in the season. But if you're a guy that catches a lot of passes, number one, number two type wide receiver, how many yards after the catch are you getting? He averages over 11. Nobody else averages 7. The top five is McLaurin, 11.2, Cooper Kupp, 6.8, Robbie Anderson, 6.5, CeeDee Lamb, 6.3, Juju Smith-Schuster, 6.3. So we could talk about how bad this skill group is until we're blue in the face. Dwayne Haskins has one elite-level weapon. Terry McLaurin, since the start of last year, has been one of the better receivers in this league.
This was my big question coming into this year, okay? There are other rookie receivers, other young players that had, you know, bigger and better numbers than Terry McLaurin, but he was ours. He was our find. He was our shining star, where we were told he was a special teams contributor when he was first drafted out of the Ohio State University, and he kept being the talk of camp. I've heard a lot of talks of camp. I've played that game before. I've done that. I've done my Chase Minifields, my Marco Mitchells, my guys who are really, quote-unquote, turning heads in camp, though. I've played that game a million times. It turns out, not only is he good enough to be a part of this group and be towards the top of that group, he's good enough to be part of any group. He's really, really good, and that's exciting and fun. And he's also a mensch, which is like my favorite part about it, is that he's a great dude, non-diva division, just wants to catch passes and get first downs. He loves first downs so much, he makes me happy.
Yeah, it's the dream. This is what you want. You want the guy on your team who's a great player and a team-first guy at a diva position who happens to be outstanding, and these are unicorns. You know, they're like seven-footers who shoot threes and can take you off the dribble and play point guard. Terry McLaurin, Allen Robinson, those types of guys. Now, where does he rank among NFL wide receivers? I don't know. I mean, we can have that conversation now or at the end of the year, whenever you'd like. I can just tell you, based on production, he's one of the more consistently productive wide receivers in the sport since the beginning of last year. Is he in the back end of the top 10? Maybe not yet, but he's played like it. since he got into the NFL. If not, it's just because he was drafted in the third round of Ohio State, and there are other guys with bigger names that make more money that we give that credit to. But there are not teams where he wouldn't start, I don't think. Maybe Dallas, you know, where they've got Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb, 1 and 2. He based on merit, should start over CeeDee Lamb. Lamb maybe is a more talented guy in the first round. But good luck finding organizations where he's not one of the top two guys, a starter on the field. We talk all the time about this. How many players here start on 32 teams? We've never really had McLaurin in that conversation, but we need to start thinking about it. The dude just keeps on performing.
Yeah, they're probably, you can count them on one hand. Atlanta, with Calvin Ridley leading the universe and everything, and Julio Jones. Tampa, when everybody's right, and you got Evans and Godwin, he would, you know, he maybe beats out Godwin, I don't know. But you see the point. That's the kind of conversation we have. There are very few situations where that guy wouldn't play. I think Scherff would play for the majority of offenses. I think Morgan Moses starts for more than half the teams in the league. I think that's the list on offense. I really do. And McLaurin would play for the most offenses. That's a first division, good offense, wide receiver that is for real.
Let's go to line one. Kevin's in Arlington, wants to hop in on Grant and Danny. Thank you for the call, Kev. How are you?
Hey, guys. You know, I think Coach Rivera's been leaving breadcrumbs for us all along, but not giving us the answers, if you will. Let me just elaborate on this a little bit. I think it's clear now, more than ever, that when he got his job from Dan, that in the discussions leading up to his hiring, Dan must have said, you've got a mulligan year, okay? We've got a young quarterback who hasn't played very much that I believe in. I want to see him play. We also have this very talented roster of young players. I want to see them play. I also want to see probably, you know, do we have the people we need in the front office, Kyle Smith et al., to find more good young players. I think that's, number one, what's going on here. Number two, Urban Meyer has told him, you want to get better results out of Dwayne? Challenge him. What did he do today with his comments? He challenged him. He said there's a shelf life, how long he can go forward with Dwayne, you know, self-destructing, basically, like he did yesterday. So I think that's certainly not a shot over the bow, but come on, Dwayne. You know, I'm your guy. I'm backing you, but we need to see more. But for me, I just see what I've always seen. The microcosm of that game for me is Dwayne, where he misses McLaurin in the corner of the end zone, and then in the same series, throws a perfect ball where he sets his feet, he throws a strike, and then we get a touchdown. That's Dwayne. Half of the time he's good, half of the time his mechanics are off, and he's bad. And as you've been saying, Grant, we have 10 starts. We have one exceptional start last year against Philly out of those 10. And there aren't a whole lot of deposits. And at some
That's
point,
the big frustration, right? Because, and Kevin, yeah. You know this. Thank you for the call.
Thanks,
and you've
Kevin.
Said this well in a lot of your calls, not specifically today necessarily, but in all the calls you've made where you talk about the bad, like we expect to see some bad. I had people blowing me up yesterday. You know, give him a break for 3 interceptions. Look at Kyler Murray. The 3 interceptions are not the problem. It's that I'm waiting for the Kyler Murray moments. And he's a bad example. He went 1-1 for a reason. How about the Justin Herbert moments through two right. weeks? He hasn't thrown for 270 yards. And yards are not the end-all be-all. But my point is, I'm waiting. You know, I'm going to go back and watch that Philly game where he was really good that we all make out to be a 600-yard, 6-touchdown game from last December to try to figure out what that was and was it as good as I remember. But that's the game in 10 starts. That's the deposit. There was half of another good game against a terrible Giants team in December that was awful on defense, and he got hurt in the first play of the second half. So maybe he was on his way to a second straight really good game. Chris in Hyattsville, you're on Grant and Danny. How are you?
Grant, Danny, how you guys doing?
Good, buddy. What's up?
By the way, can I went off the field for 1 second?
Why
Yesterday,
not?
I went to my sister's house to watch the game and help her back up her computer, and she forgot a Christmas present that she was supposed to give me last year, and it's a plaque of the 2019 national champion, World Series champion, Washington Nationals. With like a commemorative little letter on it and everything,
oh,
and limited
oh, that's
edition.
Really cool.
So that's Yeah, totally. Unexpected gifts are the best kind. Mm-hmm. So anyway, look, I hear what everyone's saying, but Grant, this your fervor and energy today is really contrary to what you have always said that you believe in, which is process. Because, look, you take a couple of bad games, and let's be fair, he has not been good this year. But again, that is still not a full season. Kirk Cousins was given much more opportunity to grow and perform.
Kirk Cousins threw for 327 and two touchdowns and a win on the road in his first ever start. I'm looking for good.
Yeah, but he also followed that up by plenty of games where he had three interceptions.
Yes, I'm okay with him sucking. I also need him to be good. He hasn't been.
Okay, but this is the thing. The process, right? What is the alternative to Haskins right now? You've got Kyle Allen, who's a JAG quarterback, and you've got another quarterback on the roster who's recovering from, you know, basically nearly having his leg severed. So we're either going to see this thing out and give him an opportunity to correct these mistakes, or you're going to go do what? Start Kyle Allen? How does that help?
I don't know how long you've been listening today. I'm still, and I've said this more than anyone else in this market since day one, and I'll keep saying it, I'm not benching him. If I'm the coach or the GM, he's playing 16 games this year.
Okay, I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of people who are ready to already move on from the guy.
Well, they're wrong.
We're bucking against that,
As bad as he was yesterday, I did see flashes where he does things that a lot of other guys can't do right now. I mean, the second touchdown pass was an absolute seed. He can read the offense. He does have command of the offense. Inaccuracy is his big problem. But he's not, you know, incompetent out there the way RG3 was in his second and third seasons, where he just could not even look through the progressions and was getting sacked on every play. And Jay Gruden didn't even want to start him coming out of preseason. He's understanding the tools. But I can't say this enough. He had no offseason, and this is his second coordinator in his first two seasons. I mean, I just think we got to cut the guy slack, and it's not like there's someone chomping down the bit.
It's not like Chris. We're cutting
him a lot. It's not like Tua Tagovailoa is waiting to take his spot.
No, and I appreciate the phone call. Again, if I was saying today bench him for Kyle Allen, then that call would have made a lot of sense. I am saying he's not playing well enough. We're evaluating his play. He was terrible yesterday. He started 10 times. He's been really good one time. That's what I'm saying today. Second part of the conversation. Should they bench him? Absolutely not. They shouldn't bench him. Nobody is claiming or saying that they should bench him. If I was saying today they should bench him, then I think you're right that I'm not thinking enough about the process. It's all I'm thinking about. Keep playing him, because we're going to either find out that this is who he is and they need to draft a quarterback, and ideally they'll be picking high enough to do that, or we're going to find out that he can improve and is better. I'm not giving up on him. I might be giving up on the idea that he'll ever be great just because I haven't seen enough flashes yet. But do I think he could potentially be a game-managing Alex Smithy type with a better arm, you know, quarterback you can win 10 games with? Yeah, I still have hope for that. There's nothing I've seen to this point other than maybe one game that makes me feel great about that, but I still have some hope for that.
Yeah, here's where my slack is. Keep sending him up. That's my starter. Go ahead. Sink or swim, dude.
Good point.
Because you know what I mean? That's where slack comes in.
If this was a veteran, he'd have been benched already. You know what I'm saying? Like, he wouldn't have finished the game yesterday. Mitch Trubisky didn't play nearly as bad yesterday as Dwayne Haskins. Mitch Trubisky, they have a bigger sample on. He got benched. So that's the slack. The slack is I keep playing him. We could talk about Kyle Allen if you want to next segment.
I'm okay, I think.
That people want to do. You know what's interesting, though, is, and again, I'm not advocating that he should play. Nothing to do with Haskins, everything to do with kind of where he was drafted and what the situation is here. I think Kyle Allen, at this moment, you'd probably agree with me, is better than Dwayne Haskins in this offense. Is that fair? I mean, Kyle Allen last year in his one season playing played better than Dwayne Haskins did in his one season playing. But that's not the point to me. Like, people that want to go to Kyle Allen, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to go 7-9 or 6-10? Or I don't really get the point of that. What is Kyle Allen's ceiling?
It's very low. I have no interest in it.
Yeah, that's fairly succinct. I don't think it's probably as low as you do. Maybe he could be an okay quarterback. But my point is, if Dwayne Haskins is not your starter in week one next year, I think that the starter is a guy who's in a college classroom today. So then stick with Haskins and figure out if he's the guy or not. Grant and Danny on the Fan. I would just say don't forget about that terrible offensive pass interference call on Terry McLaurin when the game was close. I think Washington had just gone behind 20-17 maybe, or it was 24-20 I think it was. They got the ball back. They could go drive and take the lead. There was a 9-yard catch by McLaurin that would have given the team a second and one. It was an awful call. I don't know what you thought, but I thought that was just a ridiculous PI call on Terry McLaurin. And then instead of second and one on the offensive pass interference, it's first and 20. Feels insurmountable for this offense, and
sure
Haskins
does,
would
yeah.
soon thereafter throw a pick. You know, maybe we never get to the third pick if they're moving the chains there and they're ahead of the sticks. I hated that call, though. I thought it really hurt them.
Yeah, not a fan. To me, it's got to be like a moving screen in a basketball game for me to get offensive PI, or like a stiff arm that throws the guy to the ground. You know what I mean? Like, the refs love to call that now because it's something else they can do to get themselves on television. They just love being the center of the game. Like, what was the one? Was it Michael Gallup, I guess, in week number one where he's, you know, being grabbed and held and he's pushing? Like, they're all just trying to catch the football. Sometimes that's okay, but they ended up calling it because he won the matchup. He got the better of it. I hate stuff like that, man. You know, like, at a certain point, it's okay if the football players decide what happens on the football field.
Crashed back down to earth yesterday, Danny, on my Rocket Mortgage picks.
Did you?
Yeah, I was feeling it on a heater in week two. The Lions beating the Cardinals, among some other upsets yesterday, got to me. But you can compete against me and the hosts from Entercom around the country via Rocket Mortgage Pick'em for up to $10,000 with the 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up today at radio.com/picks. You can get in for tonight and for the rest of the season. Just pick the winner of each week's games. No point spreads, no lineups, totally free to enter. Pick the most games right throughout the season, and you could win $10,000. It's the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up now at radio.com/picks. All right, bro, tonight, Monday Night Football, Chiefs, Ravens, the game of the year to this point. I mean, this could end up being the game of the year when the season ends in terms of matchup going in. We'll see if it lives up to the hype. Last year's most valuable player, Lamar Jackson, who's a human highlight reel. Last year's Super Bowl MVP, Patrick Mahomes, who is also a human highlight reel.
Yeah.
And a team that wants to spread you out and sling it, Kansas City. A team that wants to bunch you up and beat you up running the football in the Ravens. Yes, please. Can't wait for this.
The Ravens, since they acquired Marcus Peters last year, are one of the sneaky best defenses in the sport, especially against the pass. They're not a great pass rushing team, even with some of their additions. Can they do enough to slow down Mahomes? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I tell you this, I'm giddy about this matchup. I love it. I love contrasting styles. I love how well these organizations are run. These are the teams that are the best in the sport right now. These are two young quarterbacks that are taking us boldly into the whatever decade this is. I guess it's the 20s. I'm giddy about it, man. I cannot wait for this matchup. I wish it was week 14 and both teams were like 13-2. It's so much fun. I cannot wait for tonight.
Darryl Green going to be on the show tomorrow at 11 a.m., by the way.
Well, that's
just
cool.
Got an email. Wants to come on and talk about a couple of things. So what Darryl Green says he wants to come on.
You say yes.
We say yes. We'll ask him about whatever he needs us to ask him about, and then we'll talk football with one of the great players here in Washington of all time. A Monday Night Football should be spectacular. Enjoy it. Remember, as frustrating and disappointing as today was, kind of breaking down a tough day for Washington and Cleveland. First place in the NFC East, Danny, where the air is crisp.
A lot of fun up here. Rarefied air in first place.
That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.